Hello, welcome
Hello.
to, and that's Morgoth. Welcome to what I think is the 13th, whatever it is, this millennial 2016 hangout, and this is with Morgoth of Morgoth's Review. Before I begin, I should say I apologise that the two Flanders Readings videos that I had scheduled for yesterday and Christmas Day didn't go up. I've just been very overworked recently, both professionally with the channel and in other areas of my life as well, so I simply couldn't do it in time. I wanted to, but I couldn't manage it. Sorry. I apologise. Hopefully they'll go up in the new year. With that said, I'm very happy to welcome back to the channel Morgoth. He was on, it was just after the Brexit referendum, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So for anyone who doesn't know, Morgoth has a blog, and he's been going with this sort of thing for about 10 years now on the internet, because I first encountered him on the Telegraph blogs back in, it must have been 2007. So he's got a very good blog. I recommend you check it out, especially if you're British. And so welcome to the channel, Morgoth.
Thanks. Nice to be back.
And before we get, we're going to concentrate on one particular article. Let me see if I can link people to it in the live chat. Here it is. It's by Matthew D'Ancona. But before we get into that, how about you summarise your own thoughts on 2016?
Well, the last time I was on, it was in the middle of the year, and we talked about, with Polly Toynbee, who wrote an article, and it was just after the Joe Cox murder, and the article made quite an impact on me, because like you say, I've been at this for a long time. And then all of a sudden, she got it, that something was wrong with the public mood, as she put it, that something wasn't right. The reaction to Joe Cox's murder wasn't right. The way things were looking towards Brexit wasn't right. And she wrote this kind of article saying that it's all gone wrong. I don't like this. There's something in the air. And then I thought she was right. Everything went to hell for the left this year. And so I thought it would be fun to have a look at this other article, which has come out in The Guardian yesterday, which is them 6 months later kind of trying to put the pieces together.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, the whole thing, I think they've had a... Who was it? Somebody was saying that they really thought they'd... in fact, it was on Facebook about half an hour ago. I read this comment, and it was from someone was commenting on a tweet by Michael Moore. Michael Moore was saying, people keep asking me, what can we do? Tomorrow I will announce it. And the person commented, these people thought that they really were at the end of a huge struggle, and that they had won. And they thought they had it all sewn up, and they are shocked by Brexit and especially by Trump.
Yeah, I think you can divide them into two different camps. The old guard, like Polly Toynbee, they've been around. They remember when the only constituency the left had were working class white people. But your own Jones, Laurie Penny, and Matthew D'Ancona. How do you say that?
I don't know how to say it, but Matthew D'Ancona. Yeah, that must be it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at it now. He's got the typical cook face. And he's never known anything else. Their constituency is the gays and the intergender queers and all of this, blacks and Muslims and all of that. And so he doesn't think whites have any right at all to reject the program. And so they don't get it, whereas the old guard, they kind of do.
Can you go into more detail about that? You think that the sort of baby boomer, the Polly Toynbees, that generation are actually more realistic about us?
They remember when the only constituency the left had was the working class white. So, and they are probably, I think at some level, probably aware of the betrayal of what they have done. And whereas these younger, I mean, like I said in the last hangout, they, like with Jeremy Corbyn, in his youth, he would have went to working men's clubs in the north. He would have went to working men's clubs in Sheffield and Hull and Sunderland and gave speeches about unionism and all of that. Whereas these younger, the social justice left, I think we should call them, they don't understand that. They've never been through that at all. It was out of uni and onto a blog somewhere, and you get picked up by the Guardian or the New Statesman or the Independent, and you're on Question Time, and that's that.
Yeah.
But their base, they don't understand a base which isn't intergender queers and Muslims and blacks.
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, this reflects the change in the left's focus over the last 50 yeah. years. You know, I mean, 40 years ago, the left was certainly starting to... I've mentioned this in a previous hangout ages ago. There's a TV drama series called Bill Brand from 1975 or 6, and it's following a Labour... It's not a good program, but it's interesting historically because it shows a Labour politician. It's a drama, fictional drama about this Labour politician, and he's got this girlfriend who's maybe she's definitely a feminist, and she's involved with the queer rights group. She's anti-racist. She's not an SJW. She's very much feminism concerned, but she allies with queer rights. So she, like, the SJW is a holistic, is a whole thing. It's like every fucking issue, every single issue, they have the correct opinion on. Back then, it was more fragmented. You'd have a feminist, a queer activist, an anti-racist activist, and whatever else. Anyway, what's interesting about this series is it shows that the main character, this Labour politician, is really just trying to help the working class. But the people he's having to ally with are the new left. They're more into social issues, what we now think of as standard left-wing issues. So that's a sort of interesting transition point. That was 1976. And it's fascinating to see that moment in time when the left, in Britain at least, switched its focus from the working class to, that is the white working class, to, all types of sexual deviancy or sexual, whatever you'd call them, minorities and immigrants.
Well, there's a film came out in Wales a couple of years ago. I can't remember the name of it, but the story is that it's during the 80s, and the miners in Wales are on strike. They're against Thatcher and all of that. And then all of this gay pride group come from somewhere like Chelsea and join the miners. So it's all about what they're trying to do is to say, well, we've always been allies. It was always this way. The champagne socialist left and the white working class were always in cahoots. You just need to make a film about it.
It's hilarious. I mean, it's so hilarious because the champagne socialists despise the working class, but viscerally.
To be fair, the average pit village in Wales would have despised a bunch of queers from London.
But I think what we're seeing with Toynbee and this new generation is this new generation have simply emerged at a time when all of those old concerns for the working class have been washed away and replaced. So you emerge as from whatever it is, a media studies degree, into this journalism culture, the political culture, where to be concerned for the working class is, I'm guessing, almost passé. I mean, you could get away with it as long as you were also involved in, you know, standard SJW stuff. But I think it would be kind of weird now for someone just to be talking about the working class.
You'd have to be on the outer fringes of the left. There's like one of those anti-Fada groups where they were like really out on the left and anti-Israel and all of that kind of... Well, not George Galloway, because he's pretty much just traded in the working class for Muslims. But there are a few out there still, and they're just like dinosaurs, really.
Mm. And, I mean, what's interesting is they now have to ally with the whole new left stuff. They have to ally with anti-racism, pro-refugee, and so on, because that's part of how they market themselves. In order to shore up a fan base, or whatever you'd call it, a support base, they have to also voice the modern concerns.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't doubt that there are standard, you know, lefties who've been at it for 40 or 50 years. They're still at it now, and they are primarily concerned with the working class in their own local community. But if one of them was to say, something homophobic or Islamophobic or anti-immigrant, they would never. I don't think they could survive politically or
in a place like the Northeast where I am or in Wales. They do have to deal with that. The average foot slogging labour who's putting pamphlets through people's doors has to deal. They have to answer for what the social justice champagne left in Chelsea are actually doing. They have to answer to that on people's doorsteps. People who want to smash their faces in, to be honest. And I don't know how they do it. I've never had to speak to any of them. I'll just say no thanks and close the door. I'll just say I'm a far-right bigot. But they do have to answer for it. And it still works because the Northeast is still a Labour stronghold, though UKIP is on the march.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. But as a brief tangent, what do you think is the future for UKIP? Do you think they're going to just wither away or what?
I don't know. I stopped following it, really. I don't really care. I've got no idea. Will they serve their purpose? We got the vote. We won the vote. Are they going to change the name? Or I don't know what to be honest. I mean, everybody's saying, "Well, what about the Brexit? When are we going to leave with the Brexit? When's it actually going to happen?" And to be honest, I don't really mind. I like this open wound that they can't deal with it. They don't know. Well, how is it going to be, a hard Brexit or a soft Brexit? And all of this endless soul searching. I quite like that, because what you do is you wound the enemy and he can't heal. It's a bit like they don't know what to do. So it just goes on and on and on. The argument itself is, I like to see them struggle like this. Whereas if it was a quick, the irony is, if it was a hard Brexit and it was just like, snap your fingers, we're out. It will be chaos for about a couple of months, but they would get over it, but they'd still be in charge. The system would deal with it, and they would still be strong, and then they'd come after us. But that's too stupid. I think the left are shit on tactics and strategy. And like I say, this article here is just another example of it. But I like seeing them in pain, and I want the Brexit pain to last for as long as possible. It's a bit like you see a bunch of lads going past in a car and the window's open, and you throw a bag of dog shit through the window and just watch them deal with it. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if they're going to crash the car. I don't know if somebody's going to manage to throw the bag out. It's just the fact that the bag goes in there and then you sit back and watch what happens next. That's what I think's funny.
Yeah, that's a really good metaphor. The other thing is, it's lucky that this has happened at a time when the Labour Party is so weak. You know, because if this happened at a time when the Labour Party was strong and knew what it was about and had a clear identity, then it could really take advantage of the confusion that the Conservatives are in now. It's even more of a mess than the Conservative Party.
It's even worse because Theresa May is horrible. But they've recognised the weak spot, and so they've gone this kind of soft kind of patriotic way of saying, yeah, we're listening to you, we get it. And it's a kind of sly way of outmaneuvering the Labour Party, because they can see that the Tories and the white working class voted against Labour, and they want to have the white working class on board to say, well, you know, we agree, we understand, we're listening now, come to us. But at the same time, they've got the globalist oligarchs in Brussels saying, well, what the hell's going on here? So they don't really know what to do either. As I say, it's just nice to just throw a bag of dog shit through the window and watch them deal with it. And the longer, you know, it stinks out the car, the better, in my opinion. Because it causes so much chaos. It's like it's like if you shoot somebody and the bullet goes straight through, it's a major trauma, but you kind of get over it. But when you blast somebody with a shotgun and they're rolling around on the floor for years, I know I'm going one too many metaphors here.
It's okay. We're not advocating violence, just in case anyone's wondering. No, this is just pure metaphor.
Yeah. So I'm happy for the chaos of Brexit to go on and on and on.
Mm. Well, is there anything else you'd want to say about 2016 before we get to the article itself?
Not really, because I can kind of ramble on quite a bit about 2016 with what's in this article, because he touches on so many points. It's not just sort of reading through a Guardian article and pulling it to bits. It's because he's obviously as a sort of social justice lefty, and he's responding to what's happened in 2016. And I read it yesterday and I just thought it was hilarious. I just thought it's because it's so all over the place, and all of the mistakes that they made to get them into this shit, he's just saying do it all again.
Yeah. Absolutely. Which goes to show the contempt that they have for anyone who disagrees with them. They will never think, well, okay, maybe we should learn from this. They never self-reflect, because then they would learn productively from what's happened. But instead, they're not going to self-reflect, so they'll just repeat the same mistakes as before.
I mean, this article is called How Do Liberals Halt the March of the Right, Stand Our Ground and Toughen Up? And then he's gone full Henry V, is it? We can fight bigotry and prejudice if we're prepared to challenge, probe and correct relentlessly.
Before we get into this, let's just introduce this guy, because I remember reading this guy, Matthew D'Ancona. I remember reading him on the Telegraph ago. It might have been 10 years ago.
Yeah, in the picture, the cook face picture that's on the screen here, he looks about 25, but he was writing in the Telegraph ages ago. He must be in his 40s.
He must be.
I don't know if they do. Maybe they do like a Photoshop thing to make somebody look like a pained social justice warrior when they go to the Guardian or something. Because I'm sure when he was at the Telegraph, he was like a big strapping bloke.
Yeah,
like he looked quite muscular and he looked quite manly. And then he's gone to the Guardian and they've made him look like such a faggot.
Well, he's probably just been eating too much organic yogurt, and it's finally taken its toll on his appearance. I'm guessing that's what's happened here. But the point is that he, I can't remember if he was right wing when he was on the Telegraph. I think he was on the liberal. He was on the cucky liberal side of conservative back then, as I recall.
Yeah, I thought that too. Yeah, I don't recognise him as being a kind of Guardian leftist. He was on the Telegraph.
Yeah.
He
was one of the sort of pathetic right-wingers who was on the Telegraph. But what's interesting is this article, if someone read this without knowing anything about him, they would just assume this is a standard progressive, this is a standard modern liberal. I don't think there's anything in this article that would indicate otherwise, and there's plenty that would indicate that. This guy is a total basically an SJW.
In his first line, he even says, to all you despondent liberals, Labour centrists, Tory modernisers, Remainers, social justice warriors, and everyone. But he meant Tory modernisers. So even the Tory party's too right wing for him. I mean, if you're used to reading like Occidental Observer and the Daily Stormer every day, the idea that the Tory modernise, what are they going to modernise?
I don't know.
Queer marriage, for fuck's sake. What are they going to...
I know. This is when you realise just how far away from the mainstream you've become, you know?
I don't know. I don't understand the difference between a Tory modernizer. What are they going to modernise? 600,000 fucking immigrants last year.
So, exactly. Well, so the guy, I don't know if he speaks for, like, what percentage of modern so-called conservatives does he speak for? And also, is it just these bastards who are in the media? Something I've thought for some time, and I think we've all said this in one way or another, is that the media are simply talking to themselves now.
Yeah, it was... guest worker at Majority Right, because he was when I started posting comments on the Telegraph, I was kind of just into the, I was just coming out of the counter jihad scene. I was never really, because now the new generation is kind of the Daily Stormer and Paul and all the right stuff and that kind of thing. And I came into this when sites like Gates of Vienna or really.
Yeah, so did I.
And it was good, but I was always a racist. I just thought, well, okay, we'll deal with the Muslim problem first. I can understand that, but at the end of the day, what about the African? What about the Africans? I don't want them here either. Mm. And when I saw guest worker posting at the Telegraph, I just thought it was amazing, because it was the first time I'd seen. He called himself John Pigott, and his comments were so. And he was using terms like "my English people," and it was just so out and out racially aware. And he had a response to absolutely everything that was thrown at him, and it was the really deep biology stuff and philosophical stuff, Yeah, that made a huge impression on me. I think if guest work on Majority Rights has probably been the biggest influence that I've had on the internet activism side of things. It was just brilliant to see that, and I thought that's the way. This is amazing stuff that I'm reading now. And I used to find his profile, if I'd been away for a few days, and I used to find his profile and just read the comments that his replies and read the debates that he'd had with people. And every time it was just, he just demolished these people. And he would deliberately pick a fight, not really so much with lefties, but with conservatives. That was his issue, was that the conservatism was shit. He recognized the conservative problem, probably decades ago, I don't know. Mm. But, that was a big thing.
Well, let's get to the article then. So Matthew Danko, and because I mean, you know, this is he's a perfect example of a conservative. That was another thing I wanted to bring into this. I promise we'll get into the article in a minute. But when I read this article, I was reminded of one of your essays from, I think it was just after Brexit, and you said. Oh, no, it must have been just after Trump. Yeah, just after the election. And you said in it that the conservatives in the Republican Party in America will now be absorbed into the Democrat Party.
Oh, yeah. It was the... It's funny because Polly Toynbee, another one of her articles kind of influenced that one. She so a few months later... they really realized the shit had hit the fan and Trump was going to win in America. So with Brexit, the Joe Cox murder, they were like, something's wrong. What are we going to do? Something's gone badly fucking wrong here. And then obviously they looked across at America with like tens of thousands of people chanting, build a wall, jail Hillary. And then Toynbee wrote another article, and it was... did we baby boomers really bring about an age of social justice, or did we just bring in neoliberalism? And she never answered her own question in that article. She kind of rambled on about how wonderful it all was in the old days when they were a bunch of young hippies against the system. And by a weird coincidence, Polly Toynbee was, she's 1 month younger than Hillary Clinton, I think it is. Or it could be the other way around, I don't know. But they're both 69. And so they're the exact same age from the exact same generation, and they fought the same battles all of their lives. And in the end of it, but what I pointed out in the article, it was called it's on the top 10 best ever at the blog, The Tragic Life Cycle of the Baby Boomers. So
Polly Toynbee, I don't think I read that one. I'll have to read that one.
Polly Toynbee, and like I point out in the article, Polly Toynbee can kind of sit in her Tuscan villa and sip on Chianti and listen to classical music. But Hillary Clinton at that time, I think it was about August, she was still very much in the fight, to the point that she was passing out in public. This is what was in the news at the time, just dropping half dead on the floor, and they were picking her up like a sack of potatoes and throwing her in the back of a wagon. Because the system wasn't finished with Hillary yet. The system, it created Hillary, it created her worldview. And then it was literally driving Hillary into the ground, and it was going to kill her, because all they wanted to do was get Hillary across the finish line, make her president. And then if she dropped dead, then so fuck, they'll just get another yes man in to replace her. They'll at least keep Trump out.
Yeah.
But the point was that, yeah, Polly, you did spend your entire life fighting for neoliberalism, because, like I say in the article, you atomize the population, which is basically what they've been doing, and you make easier consumers.
Well, what I wanted to say about this is, you were saying that the conservative Republicans are going to be absorbed into the Democrat Party because they're not going to have a home in the GOP, in the Republican Party, and I don't know if that will be borne out, by the way, because I'm not sure how different Trump is going to turn out to be. I'm starting to have doubts, like a lot of people.
And a lot of people are, so me too. But let's see.
But along those same lines, it looks like Matthew D'Ancona is basically going to The Guardian and begging to be accepted as one of theirs, because he seems to be recognizing that he doesn't have a home on the right anymore. He might have a home on the official right.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, I see what you're getting at. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's begging as I said, there's nothing in this article that would make you think this guy's a conservative or this guy's a capital C conservative.
A Telegraph columnist from 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like he's begging for forgiveness from these liberals who, of course, will never forgive him. I mean, I actually had a look at the top comment, and one of the top comments was moaning that I can't remember the gist of it, but it was pressuring him and the right in general to be even more left-wing than it is, even more socially liberal. Oh, here it is. But you aren't a liberal, Matthew. You're a right-wing Tory, and your delusion that you think you're anything else is a large part of the problem. The window, I guess he means the Overton window, moved right decades ago. The right you talk of today are in reality the far right. Enjoy the fruits of corporatism. Now that is just such a... I mean, you tell me what you would say about that, because I think it's just insane.
Well, what he means is that the high capitalism is being lumped in with the right. So we get the right gets, or conservatives, get the shitstorm about being a bunch of greedy, money-grubbing bastards, and the left get to play the plucky underdog fighting against the system, and they've lost again. But what the left hate to admit is that the reason why the capitalism... I mean, I went into this quite a bit in the last Hangout, so I don't really want to repeat it all again, but the reason why they slice and dice up the population, they change the population, and what you get is consumers. And whether that's, I mean, feminism is a perfect example. All you do then is double the workforce. You bring women into the labor market, you've doubled the workforce. So in a way, the feminist fight for getting liberating women by giving them a 12-hour job in a factory, putting stickers on boxes.
Yeah.
Come on.
I know. But
because
it also,
that's the reality that I see.
Yeah, it also feminism also makes people consumers of sex. I mean, that's where I thought you were going to go with that. It de-sanctifies sex and relationships. It makes everyone just shop forever. Yeah. You know, I'm a perpetual shopper. Yeah. But that's another point. Do you want to go into that? I don't mind.
Well, have you heard of there's a kind of sword-wielding Catholic thing I call E. Michael Jones. I don't know if you've come across him. I've been paying some attention to him recently.
Yeah.
And I've got to be careful here because it's Christmas and nobody wants to end up in jail. But he talks extensively about a certain group that we can't talk about anymore. But basically, the way he puts it across is that usury or interest and porn go around the world hand in hand. And he points to countries where you wouldn't expect this to be a thing, but it is, such as India. And in the Middle East, the neocon policy in the Middle East was basically to overthrow their own banks, get them in debt, and then blast porn across the TV channels. And they literally did it. Why? Because when you have porn blasted into your face and it becomes an accepted norm, it literally frazzles the brains, especially of men. And what you do is reduce the population to just a bunch of sex-obsessive freaks. And that, so all of this... what do they call themselves? The skeptic community. And they always talk about porn. Porn is a method of control. Because when all you're going to do is sit around and walk and wank all day and then go to your shit job half knackered, then actually you're a fucking slave. The Catholic, and fair play, and I know this is a big debate in the national scene, the Christian angle and stuff, but you have to listen to the. I'm not a Christian, but I've got a lot of respect for this kind of thing because the Catholic Church held the forces of darkness, if I can put it that way, back for a long time, and they deserve some respect for that, I think. And this E. Michael Jones, again, feminism is just making women's objects of sex. It's just, you don't have to commit to anything. And when your birth rate falls through the floor, well, so what? You just bring a load of Somalians in.
Well, that reminds me of some two articles I've seen over the last few weeks, which is, one of them was something like Germany was in dire straits because of its low birth rate until the refugees arrived. And sickening. Just a sickening headline, because and I shared it on Facebook at the time, and I mean it was talking of people as completely interchangeable. It doesn't matter if the Germans die out, because there will be other people in Germany now. So the economy will keep ticking along. So fuck the Germans, you know.
I mean, I was actually going to come to this point a little bit later, I was planning my master plan was to round the discussion off with this point.
Well, you've just revealed your master plan.
it's all gone to hell. So I'll put it out there, and it's because if you look at the skeptic community and all the rest of it, and if we look at cultural Marxism, and we think, well, what is cultural Marxism? What are they actually doing? And what they do is round up and create a load of minority groups to take down the host. Culture, but is that the end? What comes after that? Then, so because especially, and I know there's another group involved in all this. We can't talk about them. I'm not going to jail for it. There's nothing we can do. Millennial Rose will get his channel deleted, so we'll just have to leave it there. So if you've got all these minority groups and they're busy taking down the host, and it's always white, the Christian European identity, then there has to be something that comes after that. But the problem that they have is that then you have to dissolve the groups that form the cultural Marxist vanguard have to themselves then be dissolved. And this is when, if you're really going to get into a sort of new world order globalist autarky, then Islam's the big one. So what do you do about Islam? And like I say, I wrote an article called Islam versus Liberalism, and it wasn't really a very big hit on the blog actually, but it was one of the more thoughtful ones I did, because I don't know the answer, but it's worth thinking about that. because neocon policy during the 2000s, George W. Bush, I used to read a lot of Mark Stein, and he used to critique the idea that you could liberalize Islam because that was neocon policy. It was basically you invade the countries, you overthrow their banks because they were, like somebody like Saddam Hussein would own, the Iraqi bank was basically the Iraqi bank. It wasn't in hoc to the IMF and international finance. So you get rid of that, you get them into a load of debt. And then what you do is flood them with Miley Cyrus, Lady Gaga, porn and Amazon and materialism. And it makes sense because, and people talk about, oh, you're these skeptics and things. They talk about, oh, we've got to reform Islam. And they look at it from a perspective of taking certain verses out of the Quran and all this bullshit. It's such childish bullshit. It's not going to work. They're just going to slit your fucking throat for it. What you need to do is undermine the very foundations of the identity itself. And how you do that is advocate for gay Muslims and feminist Muslims and things like that.
Yeah.
Because when Jacob and Esther are sitting in Israel, peep above that gigantic wall that they've built, and they look out, they see an ocean of people who want to kill them in their beds. And they'd think, oh, I wish, they must think, I wish they were just a bunch of intersectional gender queers who watched Miley Cyrus and bought things off Amazon. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know if it's true. But from that perspective, you think, well, why are they flooding Europe with these Muslims? Because this is where the poison is. We the problem that we have as white nationalists, we always see things from our point of view and how it affects our people. But if you take a step back from that and look at a bigger picture, because globalists don't think like that. So they think in terms of the world, obviously, by definition. So they have to expose Muslims to liberal poison in the West. So if Muslims are a problem in the Middle East and in the West, what do you do? Well, what Europeans are saying is that shut the borders and send them back. But from a globalist perspective, they're thinking, well, no, Muslims are a problem, but that means we need more of them in the West because then we expose more of them to the poison of materialism and porn. And then that kind of, you get a kind of backwash into the very heart of the Muslim world in the Middle East. I don't know if that's what they're up to. It's an idea.
I think it will work with some of them at least, because you can see a lot. I mean, we now have the cliche of the conservative who says something about Muslims and then says, they don't seem like very good Muslims to me. And what he means is that they're taking drugs, watching porn, going to nightclubs, and so on. And, I've seen like two or three, including Peter Hitchens, disappointingly, he said this. And it's because that phenomenon does exist. You have the Muslim immigrant or second or even third generation, but even first generation immigrant who, in terms of his daily lifestyle, is indistinguishable from the most lost modern Westerner. You know, just totally decadent and indulgent and lost. So that does exist.
And that's the goal. That's what they want. That was active neocon policy during the Bush administration. It fizzled out a little bit in Obama. And then you've got some, you get into problems with Syria and things like that. But the overriding goal does seem to be to destroy Islam. And you don't do it by saying to Muslims, well, we're not about this verse of the Quran, so we're going to put a line through it. And the women are going to walk around, like, we can see their faces. They're not going to wear the burqa anymore. That's banned. That's all just bullshit. What you do is attack the very religion, but the way the Muslims themselves think about the world. So if you give them feminism, the idea of feminism, how will that work? Well, it'll be it'll be bloody awful because the Muslim men are going to kick the shit out of the Muslim women whenever they have these opinions. But then that's just part of the feminist fight. That's just weird, you know what I mean? It has to be that way.
Yeah.
And because in the end, what they want is this Eurabia. And I forgot who coined that. She was a horrible old Egyptian woman. I forgot who.
Was it Bat something?
Bat Diop.
That's it.
Bat Diop. And she was from that group that we're not allowed to name. But she basically outlined the neocon worldview, the counter jihad worldview. Neocon, the counter jihad worldview.
Yeah, I remember her being quite prominent about 10 years ago. People were talking about her writings. And
she was the big thing in the college. I read a lot of Mark Stein, and Mark Stein's point was, well, you can't do it because they're not going to adapt. And more to the point, it was that he understood that many, and this is important because many in the Muslim community, you've made videos about how it's the more educated Muslims who are the most radical. Like you say, the less educated Muslims, they're not very pleasant, but they don't tend to be jihadists. They're not ideological in that way. They're more atomized, porn, maybe be a bit racist and groom a white girl.
That's the sort of Rotherham and Cologne tier.
Yeah, so there's a sort of ethnic supremacy there. But the ones who are actually plotting and doing the terror, I mean, look, let's be honest, the Western surveillance is really down on their necks. They're really trying to stop this stuff. And yet, so you need brains to get around that. And they're ideological. They understand at a certain level that it's what the West is trying to do to Islam. I mean, they're right. It's a funny thing because the Muslims are correct to fear us as white people. But what the West is, this toxic, this toxic liberal shitty mess, They are right to be worried about it.
Yeah, but we're also right to be worried about them because the thing that we would return to, Christianity or even beyond that, paganism, these things have been dissolved as powers. So we cannot really fall back on them. Or at least it's going to be a struggle for us to do that. It's going to be a struggle for us to make Christianity great again, basically. Yeah. Whereas they can always fall back on Islam. Apart from anything else, because it's centered not in Europe, but in the Middle East. So it cannot, in a sense, it can never be violated by modern Western nihilism. There's always that heart of it, that pure core that they can refer back to
The question is whether or not that heart can remain pure. Because ultimately, I'm just thinking of a possible strategy from the globalist elite here, is that there are so many Muslims with the pause, as they say, that it will lead back into the heart of the Islamic world. I don't know. Is that a stretch? I don't know. It's just a theory.
I just get the feeling that they're more robust. They're more aggressive than we are about this kind of stuff. They will not accept dilution of their creed and their faith, their religious faith, in the way that we did. Apart from anything else, I just don't think it's their time in their trajectory, whereas it was our time in our trajectory to have self-doubt. So I think this took hold perhaps just because it was time.
I don't think, I mean, many people would say, probably in the comments and things, well, the Muslims have been becoming more extreme. They've always been extreme, and that's got nothing to do with trying to combat porn, feminism, materialism. And they'd have a good point.
Oh, well, of course, but those are two contradictory drives, though. You know, the porn and so on, that's our attempt at mollifying them. They are responding by, I think, reverting to their faith, reverting to type. That's what I think is going to happen. Because, you know, you hear about this. Like that guy, the Nice one, the Nice truck driver. He was an emotional wreck. He was he'd been suicidal, and so on. His marriage had broken up, and then he found a divine calling. Well, surprise, surprise, you know. But anyway, let's, because I don't want to get too that we could go on about this for ages because it is so interesting. But we did promise to study this article, so article.
It seems kind of lightweight. I was planning on saving the heavy stuff for the end, but all right, we've done the heavy stuff. Let's get into Matthew D. Anacona and what a fucking arsehole.
In the end, it's people like him that we're going to have to deal with. So
it is at the end of the day, and. I mean, look, let's just look at, and everyone, right, we went through the first sentence, so it's, and everyone out there fretful about Brexit, depressed about Donald Trump, and scared of the alt-right. Alt-right?
Well, it's become this thing, hasn't it?
Here is my festive message. Get off the ground, you wusses. Put down your gingerbread lattes and put up your dukes.
What does he mean? I don't know what that phrase means. Well, for your dukes.
I don't know what your fists.
Oh, fists, right. Oh, of course.
Your fists.
Right. Queensbury rules, right. Okay.
This is a rallying call.
Okay.
This is going to be my first tangent, I think. Let us consult the wisdom of Sean Connery's Malone and the Untouchables. I just want to say, because I'm a bit of a movie geek, and everybody in the comments at the blog is probably rolling their eyes. But we know the Untouchables is a gangster movie from about 1989, because I know there might be some youngsters.
It was 87, I think it was.
87. And it's basically by Brian De Palma. And Al Capone is running rampant in Chicago, and they can't, the establishment can't deal with Al Capone and the mafia. It's during Prohibition. And what they invent is kind of hyper hard little gang of cops who are just inside of the law, and to go out and get them. But they are really the hardest of the hard, and the just inside the box. What's he called? Matthew D'Ancona is saying that social justice warriors have to become the hardest of the hard.
Yeah.
like Sean Connery. They even got a picture of Kevin Costner and Sean Connery and Andy Garcia with fucking shotguns. That's what they're going to become.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah. You want to get the alt right?
It's worth saying.
He's out of his fucking head, man. You want to get the alt right? Here's how you get them. They pull a knife, you pull a gun. They send one of yours to the hospital, you send one of theirs to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. What's he talking about? What a fucking lunatic. And then
you go on.
But I want to say that there's a famous scene in the Untouchables film, because Robert De Niro plays Al Capone, and there's a famous scene, and they've got all the top gangsters from Chicago around a dinner table, like a big meeting. And Robert De Niro's Al Capone. I suppose Richard Spencer is Al Capone in this scenario. And then Robert De Niro, Richard Spencer, gives this big speech about how teamwork is everything. And he pulls out a baseball bat and he kind of taps it against the palm of his hand as he walks around the table. And he says, you know, the team is only as strong as its weakest link. And he keeps tapping the baseball bat on, and he keeps walking behind all the goons sitting, you know, eating at the table. And then he stops behind one of them, and he pulls a baseball bat, and he And he says, "We've just found the weakest link," or something like that. And he smashes his brains in with a baseball bat. And I thought it would be a great meme, if anybody's listening, to do that with Richard Spencer and Paul Joseph Watson.
Yeah,
the team's only as strong as its fucking, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And anyway, so that was a little digression.
Okay, go on.
Before we proceed, it's such an arsehole. Before we proceed and to preempt litigation, let me emphasize that I am speaking metaphorically. If you by any chance prank the Mark Boxing Day by going after a member of the far right with a pointed stick, please don't. Being against the law, it will only complicate matters. It is also likely to give you indigestion after all those turkey sandwiches.
Yeah, this is the hilarious comedy paragraph before he gets to the actual meat of the thing.
Yeah.
I remember really suffering through that paragraph when I read it.
Even on that one, I kind of nodded my head a little bit because he's kind of gone right to the edge about instigating violence, and then he's kind of walked back from it. And I've wrote posts at the blog where I think, ooh, I've just called for like mass executions or something. And then I'll go back and put like, after a fair trial. So we can execute people, but yeah, it's got to be after a fair trial. Fair,
well, you know, by the rule of law.
And you can see this real, because I do that, and let's say he's on the other side of it, he's done that, and you can see that we really fucking hate each other.
Mm.
Because, you know what I mean?
It's not real hatred. Yeah, he's couching it with comedy, you know, jokes here and there. But the venom is real. I mean, they obviously are realizing... We've hated them for ages, right? We fucking hate the left and the liberals. And I think they've now realized what we are, broadly. And all of their contempt that they've been unsatisfyingly pouring upon mainstream conservatives all these years, they now think, oh, great, we've got a real enemy now. We can hate the alt-right.
He's finally arrived.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a funny thing. I wrote an article called I've never been so angry right now, and I called it "The Public Sector Bolsheviks and the White Kulaks," and it was about the Oxford grooming scandal. And I did want the people who are responsible for what happened to those white girls, I want them to be hanged. But, and you have to walk it back, and you have to say, after a fair trial. But that was my level of anger towards 400 white girls being, really young white girls, 12, 11 years old.
Oh, 1,400 it was.
Yeah, I'm talking about Oxford.
Oh, Oxford. Oh, sorry, I thought you were saying Rotherham.
No, it was Oxford. And so I read the entire report, and I was fucking seething with anger to the point where I had to take a break and then, you know, go out walking the dog in the fields for an hour or so and then come back and come at it again and then go out again. And I was absolutely fucking livid with what the court reports, the investigation where a girl walked into a police station with blood on her crotch area of her jeans, and she was kind of dismissed as a bit of a, you know, wacky wild child. And the police woman, she was called Sarah something, I can't remember the name, and she was then later put in charge of the post-Brexit kind of hate speech hunt that the government sponsored, you know?
Wow.
And I just thought, And that was the article that I had there, and it's the angriest article I've ever written, I think. But I had to walk it back a little bit because I was you get to the point where you just want these people dead, and you think, okay, I can't do that. I have to say we've got to put they've got to be held to account.
Yeah,
you can't just get away with this shit.
Oh yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sense of injustice. We have this elite who have been so criminally irresponsible. But the point that we're getting to is the left now have this degree of hatred for us. Or, and with them, you see, this is the interesting contrast, right? With us, we've got a damn good reason to feel this way about the left, these high-profile liberals. The only reason they have for hating us is that we disagree with them, which is a fascinating reflection on the leftist mentality, I think.
I mean, I'm going to come to something in a minute, which is in his article, which is a little bit closer to home. But when I have to walk something back and say, okay, we can't go out and kill people. They've got to have a fair trial, and then we'll kill them. But he's doing the same thing, but it's in a national newspaper. I just run a little fucking hate blog at the end of the internet, and he's doing this about us in a national newspaper.
Yeah,
it's a funny thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get into his. So anyway, he says, still, in every other respect, it really is time to stop stopping and toughen up. So here are my top 10 tips for liberals of all kinds hoping to stop the march of the right in 2017. Defend your ground aggressively. And this is the liberal being a tough guy. Pluralism, women's equality, ethnic diversity, our responsibility to refugees, internationalism. What's that? What does that mean? LGBT rights. All that is now under systemic attack. It won't defend itself. One of the enduring lessons of Bill Clinton's campaign is that rapid rebuttal works. When idiots post idiocy on social media, call them out. Challenge, probe, demand answers. Be civil but unrelenting. Never cringe or yield ground to bigots. Facts defeat fury sooner or later.
So well, the implicit assumption here is that they have the facts on their side.
Yeah.
Just at the end there.
Yeah. I mean, there's what do you do with these people? colonize your opponent's language. And this is a good one actually. The Brexiteers, alt-right, and Breitbart gang have been expert in their vocabulary. Take back control. Now I'm into this stuff, you know, and I've got to read hundreds of comments a day, and I read all the blogs and everything like that, but. Take back control? Was that a thing? Did we say that this
time? When he said that, I didn't know what he was referring to. I don't remember that being a...
Take back control?
It must be a Brexit slogan. It doesn't make sense for it to be... Could it have been a Trump slogan? I don't know. But I'd never heard of it.
I don't think it's a Trump thing. Trump is... It's too vague for Trump. Trump, take back control? No, I think it's just a lie. Was a great campaign slogan anyway. I never saw it. But what does control mean to the mother of the three who's... All right, so he's doing it. But what does control mean to the mother of three whose pay is lagging behind inflation, or the 55-year-old man suddenly made redundant because her employer is relocating to the continent? Why isn't it the 55-year-old white man who was made redundant because of the diversity quotas?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And with the very next sentence, he would allude to that. He says, or to the restaurateur no longer able to hire migrant labour.
Yeah. Why can't the 55-year-old white man work in a restaurant?
I know. But this is a good example of how they just don't... They don't examine the effects of their own ideas. Oh, God, it's sickening.
And why is centrist speech dismissed as virtue signaling? I love how they, like, there's the people at the right stuff have come up with all these clever kind of piss-takey ways to inflict pain on liberals.
And this entire article is virtue signaling.
Yeah, it should have been called "Fuck You, the Right Stuff." Because it's all of these memes that they have to deal with. Why is centrist speech dismissed as virtue signaling while fiercely right wing language is hailed as plain speaking?
Well, I know what I would say about that, but you know, it's just yeah.
This is an interesting one, and he finishes this particular poem with saying, "As for liberal elite, that has come to mean little more than people in London I don't like." Again, point this out, you'll find that the most sensitive snowflake of the lot is an alt-right tweeter called upon to define his terms. but there is a liberal elite. You're writing in a national newspaper. I've got a little blog, and Millennial Wars has got a fucking YouTube channel, and we're both hiding. So there is a liberal elite, and you have this, and we have what we have.
Yeah.
That kind of stands to reason, doesn't it? But this is what I've noticed about this, yeah. They fucking hate the term liberal elite, because a liberal isn't supposed to be part of elite. The liberal is supposed to be the plucky underdog fighting the system. And they don't know how to absorb that. They don't know how to ingest the fact that they are the system. And
yeah. They have no idea. They don't know how to accept that they are now the establishment and that they're in charge and that they have been in charge for a very long time. It's not just a realization they have to make now, like, oh, we've just taken control. No, you've had control for about, well how long? Since the 1930s, really, in academia.
Depending on how you want to look at it, they've been in control for a long fucking time. And this is the first, they've had 6 months of rebellion, and they're the untouchables, so are going to come out on the streets and stab us with sticks. It's pathetic.
Yeah. I think it reflects their own arrogance, though. I mean, their self-love. 6 months of rebellion, okay, it's time to get vicious.
Yeah. And he comes to that at the end in a kind of, it just gets so bizarre. And Richard Spencer, because like me, I'm a bit of a nerd and a geek, and I like to analyze popular culture. And that's why I like Richard Spencer, because he's kind of the same. And he did a thing about Star Wars recently, and he said, if you ever notice, the rebels in Star Wars are always the underdogs. And then the new movies, you don't get to see, because the Empire was blown to pieces, they lost at Return of the Jedi. But then he's got this, what's it called now, the new trend, it's a periscope thing. It was on YouTube anyway, and he points out that when you look at the new Star Wars films, the left are on the back foot again. But why didn't we see the right smashed to pieces and the right having to reform itself and gain power and come back up slowly? And how did they do that? Is that not part of the story? But no, we don't get to see that. We just see, after, say, Return of the Jedi, the evil right-wing empire is smashed. And then immediately again, the left are just this little kind of groups have to fight the evil system. The evil system itself just rises out of nothing and nowhere.
Yeah, there is no way for them to insert themselves into this story as the system, as the establishment.
That's why they really hate being called the liberal elite, because, well, you've got power, you're doing this. I mean, my mother went to the Boxing Day sales in Newcastle yesterday. Just to bring it back down to earth a bit. So my mother and my sister went to the Newcastle Boxing Day sales yesterday, and there was armed soldiers on the streets. They were probably officially, they were police probably. But at any rate, they went for a bit of a snoop, and, you know, we'll have a coffee and we'll have a snoop around the shops. But there's like combat ready fucking soldiers on the streets and with guns, and not just pistols. They had automatic assault rifles on the streets of Newcastle on Boxing Day sales. So they come back home, and you get sent a text. They say, "What the hell is going on? Is it that bad?" And then Newcastle's still pretty white, actually. I mean, if you go to Birmingham and Manchester, they've got these kind of concrete bollards, and they sort of zigzag them, so a car can't drive straight down them. They've got to make they basically a car can't get around them. And this is Matthew Deanne Connor's what liberalism that he's supporting, that he wants, because in the end, this is what he wants. That this is what he's defending here, isn't it?
Yeah. Again, there's a lack of self-reflection. If he looked at this and realized that this was the result of his policies, his ideas, then he would think, oh, so this is what I'm defending. But he never does that. He just thinks, well, what I'm defending is this the liberal utopia that will emerge once we no longer need these concrete bollards.
And it's a funny thing when you get a sort of a text message and your mother's been on to the Boxing Day sales, and she's taken an actual photo of a man dressed in combat ready body armor with an assault rifle, and said, "They've got this on Northumberland Street, Newcastle." And I was looking at the cheapy Blu-ray players or whatever it was, and you think, "Jesus Christ!"
Yeah.
And this is the liberal utopia, and Matthew Deanne Connor is.
Yeah, I know. It's this sense that.
This is
falling apart essentially.
Because what he's going for, I mean, well, there's more to come in this thing, but what he's saying is that these are things they have to defend,
because the alt right.
How are you going to defend that?
Yeah, what kind of life is this? What kind of culture is this society that you'd want to defend? But the fact is that the alt-right, we don't really know much about what an alt-right world would look like, but it's pretty damn certain that it would be ethnically homogenous. I think the various classes in society would be served in a way that gave them dignity and purpose. And there would not be men in combat gear policing people on Boxing Day. Just because that goes against every idea of society being cohesive, peaceful, and successful.
It's one of those hierarchy of needs things. This is a basic thing, because I know people like to hear things about the much deeper levels, and most of the time on the blog, things I write about are many levels deeper than what I'm talking about tonight after a few whiskeys. But the fact is, this is how normal people are viewing it. You don't have to understand Michael A. Jones and Logos and Anti-Logos and all of these high-fluting terms. What I'm just kind of playing around with here is that this is how the normal people are viewing the Guardian intelligentsia, and that's why they're losing. Because when Polly Tombean or Matthew Deanne Connor or Laurie Penny or whoever, what they have had to deal with this year was when people finally said, well, because what they did in the past was say, if you're angry, don't take it out on the immigrants. It's not their fault. You have to blame the Tory party. You have to blame big business. It's about equal pay, and they set themselves up as these sort of moral arbiters where they were always in the background dictating the morality. In 2016, what happened was the masses, the proles, turned on them, and that's why I'm fascinated by Polly Tombean's work this year, because she knew it, where she got it, where she said, it's not the immigrants, it's us. They hate us. And then what flows from that is enormous. Because they're no longer saying, oh, I'm sick of the Muslims taking our jobs, or the Poles taking our jobs, and the Muslims pulling us up. We can't be played off against each other like that. When you have a recognizable liberal elite, who you can say, well, look, my mother can't walk down the fucking street on Boxing Day sales without having bow Kia and assault rifles to protect her from being blown up. And this, these are the values you're peddling, you fucking retard? What are you talking about? And they can't deal with that. They can't deal with that at all. And they're totally retarded. And like I said, this article is a perfect example of it, which is why I kind of wanted to get into it.
Well, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. Let's get back into it. So, yeah, this is the standard smugness. You'll find that the most sensitive snowflake of the lot is an alt-right tweeter called upon to define his terms. That's just bullshit, because our terms are very easily defined. We even have there's even a glossary on the right stuff for our jargon. And a point about that, we've invented new terms, like cuckservative and so on, because there was a need for these terms. You know, things have emerged, behaviours of the liberal elite. The liberal elite has developed behaviours that need to be identified, isolated and named. And that's why we've got these terms, and they're incredibly useful. And I think, as you say, I mean, even just the term liberal elite, you know, there needed to be a way to refer to them. And as you say, these terms, I think, really make them uncomfortable, because they're sort of on the verge of self-recognition. They're seeing bits of their own behavior and they don't want it pointed out to them. Virtue signaling is a fantastic example of that. So, okay, let's move on to the next paragraph.
Treat opinion polls as no more than partial snapshots of opinion rather than flawless oracles. Use social... this is where you get into how paranoid they are about social media. Use social media to explain, correct errors, and confront folly. Not to people, please. Indeed, distrust those who invoke the people. There is no British Volk. One of the finest features of these heterogeneous islands. I mean, he's calling in the Huguenots and the Normans, isn't he?
Yeah.
Basically. But it, even then, it's weak. It's so fucking weak. It's one of those shitty kind of things you come across in a comment section or a tweet.
Yeah, someone thinks they're clever for saying it.
Anymore. Sorry, but he never has to deal with it. He'll never... That's a funny thing. They don't lead from the front. Because I know for a fact, because I've been drunk for the last 2 days, it's been Christmas, I haven't been online much. But if I'd come across this and his... I don't think he's blocked me on Twitter yet. But I would have taken him to task about some of the things in this article and invited him to a debate. But I know for a fact that he would have just blocked me anyway. And... or not replied.
Yeah, of course, that's what they always do. I've invited several journalists to debate me, and they never even reply, because that's what they would call their well, they wouldn't use this word, but they would think of it in this way. It's their privilege to ignore people like us, but then they would hate it if you pointed out that they had privilege. But clearly, they enjoy having the privilege. You know, they think they are above us when they're not. They're just not anymore.
But what he's doing is sending in, this is a kind of rallying call, like Aragorn before the gates of Mordor, to say, book up, get out there, get on social media, and take the fight to the enemy, but I'm just going to block anybody who questions this article. It's absolutely pathetic. It's not like he's leading from the front, is he?
And no, not at all. I'm going to actually see if he is on Twitter. People might want to link him to this hangout. That may be quite amusing. See if he's there. You move on to the next paragraph.
He says, acknowledge and respect the left behind, not just angry rights. Whites. This is a good one, because I don't know. Do you ever watch Owen Jones's YouTube channel?
No.
Well, this is a thing playing out, and this has larger ramifications. I don't think we're going to get into it tonight, but Owen Jones is taking the same kind of tone as this Matthew here, and he's saying, "Well, we will It really is this bombastic language that they're using. You see, we will beat the fascist alt-right hordes back into their caves from where they come. We will. You will know. No pasaran. No pasaran. We've beaten you scum before and we'll beat you again. But the problem is, he remembers that he has to be nice to working class people. So he puts it at the end. He says, but remember, we are listening to the concerns of white working class people now. And it's just so fucking fake.
Yeah. I've just typed in, don't actually link Dan Kona to this because I don't want any more fucking exposure just now. It's just been a fucking stressful few weeks. So it'd be better if you didn't. But okay, did you get to that? The next paragraph?
Yeah, acknowledge that and respect the left behind and not just angry rights. And I was just saying that Owen Jones is doing this as well. And he goes on these kind of fire and brimstone rants about how he's going to beat the
alt-right. He's quite dramatic.
About how he's going to beat the alt-right scum neo-fascism back into their holes. But he does have to remember that white working class people have concerns that need to be listened to. And you think, oh, well, fuck off, Owen. The white working class, he's called himself Heinrich Cuxley, and he's on Twitter posting memes about fucking Anne Frank. They're long gone.
Well, Owen Jones did that.
No. Never mind. Let's move on.
Okay. All right. So,
there won't be much mass consumerism if consumers can't afford food and shelter, but don't give an inch to the protectionists and the border closers. The greatest challenge to future employment, and not just the blue collar variety, is automation. Well, no, automation negates the whole point of immigration, doesn't it?
Yes.
Even people at the globalist outlet project syndicate, and I can't, just to go off on a little one here, I cannot believe that the major news outlet for the globalist elite is called Project Syndicate. I mean, you know, why did they call it Project Syndicate? Could they not have thought of a fucking more friendly name?
Yeah, I know. I mean, it sounds sinister as fuck.
It's really sinister sounding. It's like a syndicate. The mafia was a syndicate. And they've literally called their globalist website Project Syndicate. And that's all they do is have hardcore globalist propaganda. And people right there, like Gordon Brown, remember him?
Yeah.
And it's the challenge of Trump and the challenge of Brexit, how to defeat the neo-fascism and all of these things they put up there all the time. And I think, well, come on, you haven't got like a user-friendly fucking Project Syndicate. They're a bunch of Muppets, really. And they've got millions and millions of pounds and dollars invested in PR management.
Mm. I know. People are asking if you're vaping, Morgoth.
Yes, I am. I'm tired of coughing my lungs out with rollies. I gave that up about 6 months ago. And I took to an e-cigarette. And
And you're finding it quite satisfying.
It's good enough. I'm not a young chap anymore. I think I'm about 6 years older than you.
Right. Okay.
So, vaping is the way to go.
Okay, I'll bear that in mind. I mean, I really will actually, because I think I'm going to do that. Okay. So, don't give an inch to the protectionists and the border closers. You see, again, there's no self reflection, no reappraisal of his what he's believed in. Even fucking now, at this stage, he still doesn't want protectionism or a closed border. What the fuck? How many immigrants do we need? How many immigrants are we going to take in? And then as for the protectionism, well, does he see no bad effects from globalization yet? Has he not seen anything that would? What is it that he? How good does he think this has been? Maybe there are good effects. I'm sure there are. We use websites, international things, all that stuff. But to think, for now it's really the working class who get fucked by globalism, globalization. And again, it shows that people like Matthew D'Ancona do not give a shit about this. It's really remarkable.
Everything that he's written in this article so far are the reasons why they're in the shit. This article is a rallying call, but what he's putting on the table are the reasons why they are fucking hated.
Yeah.
I mean, and he says, stand up for immigration as the next one. Not just as an economic necessity, but as a cultural good. If there is such a thing as Britishness, it has cordial multiplicity at its heart. Now, okay, I do know what cordial multiplicity means, but it sounds like liberal bullshit, and it smells like liberal bullshit.
Yeah.
And it means next year when my mother goes to the Christmas Boxing Day sales, there's going to be tanks there instead of fucking men in armor and assault rifles, doesn't it? I mean, that's what it boils down to, you fucking wanker.
Yeah. And also, I don't like this, not stand up for immigration, not just as an economic necessity. Well, okay, so are we establishing that it is an economic necessity? It's not even just good for us, it's a necessity. So we've established that, and now it's also a cultural good. Even though there is fucking precious little evidence for immigration being a cultural good, I've yet to... If I hear one more fucking liberal talking about the range of restaurants, my head's going to explode. That's the
restaurant, and nobody trusts the fucking restaurants. The curry's full of cum and they've probably raped a white girl.
Well, let's just underline that you are being satirical there and we don't really mean
I'm being satirical. That was a joke.
Yeah. I've yet to hear anyone saying why immigration is a cultural good, because the only thing they can see is the restaurants, and that's it.
Have you ever seen the kind of outreach community organizing things? Hope Not Hate Does on their website. it's such convoluted bullshit. Everybody stands around. And it's always the summer, and they have this long table. And then they put, like, food on from all around the world. And then they have, like, these little kind of cheeky-chappy Indians and Chinese people in back in yellow Hope Not Hate T-shirts. And that's it. That's what the fight's all for. So you can stand there on some kind of shit buffet with a yellow twatful T-shirt on about Hope Not Hate, because there's nothing beyond that. There's just the Hope Not Hate community get together, which is probably it is funded by big business and stuff in the end anyway.
Oh my god, can you imagine attending the Hope Not Hate community get together?
And they sort of stand there with these smiles on, and they're plastered all over the Hope Not Hate website. Hey, look at us, we're having a buffet, man. It's so groovy to be multicultural. It's fucking shit. It's really shit. And everybody on Facebook, like real people, are like, oh fuck me, look at the bollards at Birmingham this year. Look at the concrete, but looks like fucking Afghanistan. Christ almighty, what's it going to be like in 15 years time? But hey, don't think about that. Think about the Hope Not Hate buffet.
You too could wear a t-shirt like this.
even their logo is shit. Even that weird sun that they have as a logo, it's like really sinister and sort of this Illuminati type weird shit with a smiling sun I'm sure there's people in the comments of my blog have counted the kind of pricks on the sun and it's probably some kind of sinister some kind of sinister Masonic sign or something, but the whole thing is just warped. Do you know what I mean? What are you selling here? I mean, right, stand up for integration. Don't confuse.
No, nothing. Sorry? It's okay. Don't worry about it. I think there was a weird blockage there in the telephone lines. Anyway, every time sometimes I go to the Home Not Hate website just wondering, you know, what's on it this month. I go every few months, and it's just tragic. I don't understand how anyone could ever get into that stuff.
Well, there's a funny thing, because I work full time. I've got a crappy day job, and I run this little hate blog on the side, and it's so busy. There's so much traffic comes in. I mean, you know, I'll get like 2,500 hits a day is the norm. And yet Hope Not Hate is this big government-sponsored thing, and they've got all the unions behind them and everything. And if you look at it and you look at what's going on the site, it's a fucking wasteland. It's nobody's interested.
Mm. Well, this is why it's really interesting, because I once read this quote. I'm sure it was part of riffing on some other older quote. The quote was, "Support for the multicult is a mile wide but an inch deep." And I think that's generally true.
Yeah, that's well said, actually. Yeah, it's who visits the Hope Not Hate website?
I don't know. I was very amused to see. In fact, I'll look it up on YouTube now. I'll look their channel up, because this is hilarious. If it's as bad as I think, they've got 352 subscribers. Fuck you, lols.
It's pathetic. It's shit. But to be fair, I mean, you know, I don't want to go off on my usual hobby horse of the left being owned by globalism, but Hope Not Hate really is owned by globalism. And I did a I'm going to have to be careful here, because it leads into some funny territory. But I made a blog at the beginning of this year, and it was called "The Mysterious Disappearance of Hope Not Hate Counter Jihad Report." And it was a funny thing, because they've, for years before the alt-right, the counter-jihad, Tommy Robinson, EDL, you know, Kate Wilders, the Gates of Vienna, all of that kind of thing, that was their main kind of what they focused on. You know, they were the bad guys. And at the beginning of this year, Hope Not Hate released, it's weird, because you get so far right-wing that actually, that's going to be good stuff, because we don't like the counter-jihad very much either. Mm. And there's going to be certain interests there that we on the, you know, the ultra alt-right white nationalist fringes want to have a look at. And I did have a look at it, and I read their report, and it was a good report. And it was very glossy. They had, you know, the pixels and everything. It was all very sharp and very well made. But they had to pull it. 2-3 days after they published it, they pulled it, because Hope Not Hate is funded by a certain set of interests. And what they had made the big, big mistake of all leftists, they followed the money all the way up. And they had this kind of huge kind of chart about how all these... So you had, like, say, the EDL was on the British First or whatever was on the lower tier, and then you had these websites, well, quite a lot of them actually, Pamela Gellan, all of that, and then it above that there was another tier, and there wasn't so much. There was actually just about six, and they were on the, say, right side. They were neocon think tanks and publications and interests, and on the left side it was just a bunch of hedge fund bankers, really. But then when we took it a step further up, it got even less, and it was like just four people in charge, and that was as far as Hope Not Hate got, and it was getting a little bit too close for comfort, and the whole report was shelved, dumped. That was the end of that. So
yeah, it was. I remember it happening, and I remember Douglas Murray talking about it or doing an article about it, and he didn't touch on that. It was, what the hell was it? He touched on some other angle of it, but anyway, it doesn't really matter. But yeah, it was hilarious. They they sort of shot themselves in the foot there.
Yeah, because basically their globalist funders got a telephone call from somebody in a Washington think tank and said, yeah, look, we've got plans for the counter-jihad scene, and it plays into a larger picture and what we're trying to do. So get those arseholes. Get those arseholes in England to dump that fucking... Well, who are they? Is it hope, not love, or whatever? Just tell them to fuck off. And they did. They fucked off with... They were quite happy to fuck off. And I'm saying this knowing that Hope Not Here are probably going to listen to me saying this. But that's what happened. Your big globalist bankers, and I can't even go in any further because I'll end up in jail, but your big globalist banker hedge fund friends told you to go fuck yourselves, and you went and fucked yourselves. Hope Not Here. You did it.
Indeed. Indeed.
So let's, you deserve let's nothing but contempt.
Oh, of course they do. Of course they do. They, and you can tell that just by looking at them. You can tell the kind of people they are. They're snide, sneaky, shitty,
smug. They're shit. They're shitty people. They're shitty people because years and years ago, my first incarnation of kind of online activism and things was on Facebook, and I got badly beaten by these bastards. But I don't really want to go into it because I ended up running off Facebook and doxed and everything like that. But yeah, I don't like Hope Not Here. They're sneaky, dishonest bastards.
Indeed. Well, let's proceed with the article because we've not got long left. So where did we get to? Demand maturity in public discourse.
Stand up for immigration.
Yeah, stand up for integration. That's where we are now. So do you want to read that one out?
Don't confuse liberalism with relativism. Present integration as an opportunity, not a burden. Insist upon adequate resources for English teaching. Respect and celebrate difference. But define a core of legal duties, social responsibilities, and cultural norms to which all must adhere. Never let the claims of faith trump the promotion of equality, especially of women. If your primary objective is not to cause offence, don't bother.
So this is interesting because he's saying don't be afraid to cause offence, basically. But to whom? I mean...
It's to us. Yeah, it's to us. But since when have people been bothered about offending us?
I know. So nothing's changing there. He's just saying continue to not be afraid to call them bad, horrible names and so on. He's not talking about... I suppose when he says never let the claims of faith trump the promotion of equality, especially of women, maybe he could, and then he says, don't be afraid to cause offence. I suppose he could mean don't be afraid to tell Muslims that they should be up for women's rights. I'm guessing he could mean
All right, I see. So he's ditching liberal values.
Well, where they conflict... Well, yeah, where they conflict. One of them has to go. And that's an interesting thing. Usually with liberals, they just kowtow to Muslim... what they would call misogyny. They just give into it because they know that the Muslim is too powerful a force to guilt trip about women's rights. In this case, Matthew D'Ancona is saying that we should offend Muslims and insist on equality for women.
Ah, he's becoming a skeptic.
I think that's what's going on.
He's becoming a skeptic radical individualist.
I think that's what's going on there. He's recommending that. He's also saying, there's another bit. Oh, yeah, respect and celebrate difference, but define a core of legal duties, social responsibilities, and cultural norms to which all must adhere. This is total civic nationalism and egalitarianism, really. Like, we can all get along, but we just all have to agree to get along. And we have to accept the duty to be... open-minded and respectful of each other's differences. You'd think it was the 90s, basically, listening to this. Anything you want to say about that?
No, because the legal duties and social responsibilities, well, but define a core of legal duties and social responsibilities and cultural norms to which almost every, but they don't define them. If a social justice warrior or whatever he is, well, what is he? Well, we don't even know what he is. Is he going to define them, or is Owen Jones going to define them, or is Laurie Penny going to? Who's going to define these things? I don't know.
We know what it's going to amount to, though. It's going to amount to, you've got to be open-minded.
But it's going to amount to, don't shoot my mother when she's going fucking shopping on the Boxing Day. do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, let's just go back to the Boxing Day sales, because it's really played on my mind a little bit this today. Let's just assume that the police are there, and these, basically, they're dressed up like the soldiers at somewhere like Afghanistan or Iraq. And in Birmingham and Leicester and Manchester, you've got these concrete bollards set down in a certain way where a car can't drive through them. They've got to be stopped. They're set in such a way that the car has to turn so sharply that it has to stop when it makes the turn, so they can be, well, if it comes to that, the people driving the car can be shot before they do any damage. And they'll usually have about 8 of them. So it's this kind of wriggling way of going around these concrete blocks. So let's just assume that, okay, that my mother is then rubbing shoulders with people at the Boxing Day sales, and they couldn't actually manage to find a way to shoot her, blow her up, or get a car through and run her down. Is that good then? She's walking past somebody in going to get a cheap iPhone or whatever it is, and we should be grateful that they don't have the possibility to murder my mother anymore? Because is that what you'll... Because this is what I'm getting at here. Their liberal values are such a pile of shit that it's actually depending on the fourth state, the security of the state, really, the fourth state, surveillance, the hardcore of MI6 and MI5 to keep it just floating above and not sinking down. If you remove the security servants and the police and everything what's going on, mass surveillance, then the Muslims would be killing us by the fucking thousands. There was 12 major terror attacks thwarted in Britain, the UK. I hate that phrase, the UK.
Yeah, I hate it.
In the last 12 months. So their liberal value system cannot survive beyond a police state.
Mm.
But what he's saying is that the values themselves are what matters. The police state...
That's so typical.
Just don't think about that. Just don't think about the police state. Just don't think about the men with assault rifles at the end of the shopping street. No, no, I'm not buying it.
Because this is the thing, you know, you and I can remember what Britain was like 30 years ago. And yes, you had the IRA, but you didn't have this ever-present threat of terrorism. I just don't think it was of the same scale. I mean, the only thing you could say is that the IRA were better at doing it. You know, they succeeded. I don't know what the statistics are, but I think they were from my, you know, looking at it from this point of view, it seems that the IRA were actually better at succeeding at these things than the Muslims are today. That's how it seems. Whatever. That's a minor point. The point is that it wasn't as it wasn't as prevalent. You know, now we are heading into a future in which it will be ever more and more and more and more prevalent. This threat will be ever more pervasive everywhere. Mm. That's what they're building. And yeah, this is why I'm for closing the borders. That's one of the reasons. I just don't understand how anyone who likes a liberal lifestyle, how can they be at home with what is going to be, well, what already is necessary to keep this thing going?
I mean, let's just take a step back from it and get back to what he's saying in the article. Because at the end of the day, this is how we live now, and he is trying to weaponize leftists to go out, and he actually says it in the start of his article. I mean, here's how you get to them. They pull a knife, you pull a gun. They send one of yours to the hospital, you send one of theirs to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. But no, you don't have a knife. How are you looking at this? You've got a fucking Muslim, you've got a Pakistani in a truck who's running people down on a Christmas market, you prick.
Yeah. But let's, I think he's talking in the abstract here about argumentational tools. I think that's what he means.
I know he is, but he's trying to galvanize the liberal left as if to say, stand your ground and fight them.
Yeah.
But what do they have to fight with?
When there's concrete
bollards on the end of a shopping street to stop people being mown down by a Muslim.
Yeah. I think this is something that I've encountered, but I've spoken about this before. You get people in Britain today who think that argumentation is enough. And I don't think they quite realize what conflict has been like in the past and will be like in the future again. Pretty words and clever argumentational devices are not going to be enough when somebody simply wants to physically blow you up. It's not, this is insane. But again, you see that liberalism is a creed born of luxury, and it assumes everlasting luxury in which you can just bask in how clever you are. Anyway, for the sake, I am conscious of the time. So, oh fuck, we're actually 5 past the hour. I was supposed to finish 5 minutes ago. So let's, I've got Porphyrogenitus on next. He's an old style blogger. So let's get this wrapped up.
Okay.
Fight the next battle, not the last.
This is not the moment for the vague one nation rhetoric. There's not really much to say about that. That was the David Cameron thing about the one nation. It's the Tories are evil bullshit again. But this is good. This is the biggest political scrap since the Cold War. Autocracy versus democratic institutions. Liberalism versus traditionalism. Wall building versus openness. The alt-right, UKIP and Breitbart understand that. Do you? to the liberal? But I mean, I've just got to say again, and then just to finish up the discussion here, what is he saying? Because he's basically saying, and if you read the article, he's saying, get out there on social media and fight the alt-right. Beat them. But he hasn't given them anything to beat us with, because somebody like me, and all right, so I'm a little bit, I'm not Joe Blow, I've got a hate blog and everything, but I'm going to say, when can my mother go to the fucking Boxing Day sales without being chaperoned by a guy who looks like he's just come in from Afghanistan on the front lines? At the end of the day, that they have to answer for this.
Yeah,
I don't have to answer for that. You don't have to answer for that. The alt-right does not have to answer for the fact that we're becoming a militarized mass surveillance society. They do. And
they're the ones who are insisting that we keep going down this road.
And he starts his article by saying, you're scared of the alt-right. And that's an interesting point, because I think they are scared of us. And the reason they're scared of us is because they don't have a pot of piss in. They've got nothing. What are you going to say to them?
Yeah, I think you're right. What they fear is being exposed and being compelled to examine what they've believed in and what they continue to believe in. They desperately don't want to self-reflect. And I think that's why the alt-right scares them so much. Yeah, it might be that they think we're a bunch of Nazis and all that, but that's, you know, if that were the extent of it, then they would be confident, they would be smug, they would think, yeah, we can easily beat these guys. But they don't. There's very much an emotional component to this, even from this so-called conservative, Matthew D'Ancona.
Yeah. What they can't defeat is a discussion like this that we've had for the last couple of hours.
Yeah. Yeah, but they've never had a conversation like this.
No. Well, that's their problem, not ours. So I'm about to wrap it up. I was a little bit groggy and a little bit drunk tonight. I hope everybody's okay with that.
It's worth saying at the end here, he says, be patient. It's bound to be a long haul. There will be setbacks along the way. But if you hold your nerve, the far-right revolution will be revealed for the fraud that it is. So get some rest in Christmas week. Go back to your sitting rooms and prepare for Sherlock. Then resume the fight. So that's that. But it just interested me that he mentioned Sherlock, because, again, you get a picture of the kind of person he is and the kind of person he's writing to. You know, middle class.
Nice and cosy.
Yeah. Middle class champagne socialist twats living in London. The fucking liberal elite, exactly the ones he mentioned earlier. It is him. What can you say about them?
And then to adapt the distinction beloved by the Brexiteers, soft liberalism just doesn't cut anymore. Time to try the hard kind. Well, we've rambled on so much that we couldn't get into it, but the hard kind of liberalism, flaw with the Guardianist, the social justice left, and that's the skeptic community. We'll deal with them as well. No problem. But that's a different podcast, I think.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, on the whole, just to sum up, do you think, because I know that you're very conscious of the skeptic community, and you wrote an article about this about 2 weeks ago or a week ago, which I read at the time. You seem to think, I don't want to get into this in depth, just in a few sentences, do you think that we're heading into a situation where we have actually defeated the sort of soft champagne socialists, and we're now going to have to deal with the skeptics?
Yes, we have.
Right, because it's interesting, because a lot of people would say the skeptics are just a minor thing on YouTube, whereas you see them as something far more significant, don't you?
I can't go on about this too much. I went on about it before. Let's put it this way. I mentioned before that cultural Marxism is heading towards something, and what is it? What are they going to do? And what I said was, you're going to have to dissolve the component parts of the minority groups that are cultural Marxism. And I think, and I'm not saying this is some grand conspiracy or anything like that, I just think it's the ebb and flow of how ideologies work and where the centrist ground can be found. But I think the social libertarian environment, what would you call it, on YouTube, and they're always fighting with each other, by the way, but and I'm gonna stop looking at them that much, but I think there's something to watch there, because what they're offering is a kind of leftism which is better than the social justice left, the hyper PC inter-tranny gender queer Black Lives Matter bullshit. They're really, really attacking it. But they're also full of shit. And well, from a purely tactical point of view, it's best for us that they fight each other for a long, long time. And so we can kind of say, give a nod on the wink to the social justice warriors against these civic libertarian types like Crowdenty and these kinds of people, because they've got reach, they've got a lot of subscribers, they know what they're talking about, and they offer, and this is what I don't like, they offer a center ground which is death to us. They offer an easy cop out, which white people don't have. Either we live or we die. Either we go on and we reclaim our own countries, or we're going to disappear off the face of the earth. And the social justice left has absolutely nothing to offer white people, and that's why they're in such a mess. But this skeptic community, it gives white people a sort of easy way out of being, oh, we're all radical individualists. It's all about these abstract concepts and the Enlightenment and Rousseau and Voltaire. Bullshit. Not going to work when you're a fucking minority and people are ruling you from Somalia.
Well, let's get into that in another
point. That'll have to be another day, I'm afraid. So,
I like the idea. Thank you very much. Yeah, I think we should leave it. That's a good way to end it.
Ben, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was great having you on again. This is Morgoth. He's got a blog called Morgoth's Review. I've linked it in the description. Please have a look at it. And I'm sure he'll be back some point in the future. So
great. Thanks a lot. Bye.
See you later. And thanks to everyone for listening.